Have you ever wondered what it means to build with intention? Well, I'm Matt, and with my co-host Hamish, we are dedicated to pushing boundaries and building better homes. So we welcome you to join us on the Mindful Builder podcast, where we are committed to driving positive change in the building industry by surrounding you with experts in their field and being open about our lives as builders. So join us on this mindful journey of construction by subscribing to the Mindful Builder podcast. Please note that all advice provided here is general in nature and may not apply to every individual situation. It is important to consider your unique circumstances and consult with relevant professionals or experts for tailored guidance. Use this advice as a starting point for reflection and exploration, and always trust industry professionals when making decisions.
What do we call these, Matt? Building science conversations?
Yeah, building science.
Think some of the comments from last one that we did was about, you know, whether or not we're going to get like conclusive answers. And I think last month's topic probably kind of left everyone with more questions than answers. I kind of feel like today's topic, there's probably a little bit more known science around warm roof versus cold roof. So we could probably, hopefully everyone's going to come away with better understanding of what to do in their own situation. And probably a big disclaimer goes out to everybody's scenario and everybody's situation, everybody's build is going to be different to the next one. So it's probably hard to say a blanket rule for every project, do this and everything's safe. Cameron Munro is famous for saying, well, it depends. And it probably is true in this particular scenario. So before we get stuck into it, I am going to throw to Jess to introduce herself and tell us a little bit about who you are, and I'll just go around the room and get everyone to introduce themselves. So Jess, over to you.
All right, thanks, Hamish. Yes, my name is Jess. I live in Adelaide, and I'm a passive house and building science consultant. So we at Climashore, we distribute Proclimber membranes and consult with builders and architects and homeowners on building performance.
Awesome. Bradley.
I'm Brad from Sanford Build Co, and I'm a builder in the Macedon Ranges.
Right, Shawnee.
Sorry, trouble pressing the unmute button for me. I'm Sean Buchanan from Haven Homes Tasmania, builder in Climate Zone 7 down in Tasmania. I am team It Depends with cold versus warm roof.
And can I also jump in with Sean? One important part.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Hey, and I'm a dad.
I was about to say that. Congratulations, Shawnee. Congratulations.
Thanks, guys.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Amazing.
He had a kid, FYI.
So many babies around Munro. Right now with you lot.
All right. G'day, everyone. I'm Cameron of Passive Analytics based in Melbourne. I'm a passive house consultant.
Any baby news, Cam?
I'm a bit beyond that now. Well, okay, beyond.
Well, never say never. Dylan.
Yes. Good afternoon, fellow building legends, all the listeners that are tuning in. Great to be back. I run a building company called All One Projects. We focus on deep energy retrofits and a lot of heritage listed projects. Drinking the Heaps Normal today as well. I'm not sure if I'm still doing that, but I'm being a good boy tonight.
Mr. Daniel Jacobs.
So luckily my microphone is working this time. So some people know me as Airbus Dan, and I work for Proclima in Australia. And yeah, nice to be back. This time from Australia, not from Germany.
It's nice to hear your voice this time, Dan.
No, you. Let's wait for later.
Mr. Carlin.
I am Matt. I am a builder, Carlin Constructions, also a co-host on our podcast, The Mindful Builder, with Hamish. And I'm drinking
and
a
Lucky Last
2018 Christmas cask.
Very nice. And Lucky Last, Justin. And Justin's going to kick the conversation off today. So, Justin, who are you? And can you explain a little bit about cold roof and warm roof?
Yeah, so I'm Justin O'Connor. I'm based an hour south of Hobart. I'm a builder who's all about cutting through the noise and raising the standards of how we build here in Australia.
I reckon you're probably the most knowledgeable person when it comes to this kind of stuff, because you're probably one of the, other than Cameron, you're probably one of the smartest people I know when it comes to building science, and one of the, I would say, true pioneers in this space, and probably a massive influence to a lot of the people that are in this room right now. Could you maybe give the audience a little bit of an insight as to what a cold roof and a warm roof is?
Yeah, thanks. I do get bogged down in the weeds a bit. But we'll try and keep it simple. And yeah, I can explain what I believe a cold roof and a warm roof is, and what happens in Australia. My understanding of a cold roof, there's some clear definitions of this, of cold and warm roofs. My understanding is that a cold roof has the insulation on the ceiling line, so the roof space is unconditioned. The rafters, the deck remain cold, so, you know, that they're exposed to the outdoor conditions. In Australia, there's ventilation requirements with that, at NCC 2022, Part 10.8, to manage condensation within cold roofs. And it's the most common configuration, I would say, of Australian homes. Probably more than 90%. Of homes built in Australia would have that typical roof. Warm roof. So my understanding of a warm roof would be the true international definition of a warm roof. That's the insulation installed over the rafters or the structural elements, the structural decking. It's the entire structure, rafters, batten, it lies within the thermal envelope. There's minimal condensation risk when the insulation is outboard. There's no ventilation requirement. Relies on air tightness and vapor control layers. It's pretty common in Europe and UK, North America. That's my understanding of a warm roof. So that essentially the structure is kept warm. In Australia, and I know we talk about warm roofs and cold roofs, I think our understanding in Australia and what we talk about in Australia is actually a hybrid. So the structure is actually cold and warm. The outside's cold, the inside's warm. So I call it a hybrid, whether I just made that up. The insulation's within the rafters, the structure's part cold, part warm. So I guess it's not a true warm roof internationally. Often combined with ventilation or diffusion open membranes. And, you know, it's pretty typical for a raked ceiling, those types of designs. That's my take on the actual definitions. I guess we can move through some of the other bits from there.
I'm just gonna jump in quickly, and I was actually about to throw it to Dan, because obviously he's had some international building experience, and I was gonna ask a question around this hybrid approach that we are seeing a lot more of in Australia. And do you think that it's a risky way of building it, what we would call a warm roof?
To Justin or to me?
What's that?
Okay. First of all, before I answer this question, your definition is not 100% right, because, like, if you follow the DIN standard, would be the DIN 4108, they have actually a pretty clear definition what a warm roof and a cold roof is. And it's not just about, and that's a misunderstanding on the Australian market. A warm roof is not just if you have above raft insulation. So even if the rafters are fully insulated and you have a vapor permeable membrane on the outside, or it doesn't even need to, but if the rafter space is fully insulated, it's still a warm roof. So it's about if the insulation and the structure stays warm altogether. And of course, then if you have above rafter insulation, it's still a warm roof, but both categories between the rafters and above the rafters, they're both warm roofs. because the whole structure is not ventilated. What's happening on the outside of the structure, like above sheeting ventilation, has nothing to do if it's a warm roof or cold roof. So that's why it's pretty clear history base back in Germany, because that's why we defined warm roof to a cold roof, is because back in Germany we used a bitumen on the roof. So we had the rafters, and on top of the rafters we had bitumen. And you have to have like 40 millimeters gap, because bitumen, of course, as we all know, is a vapor barrier. And we had heaps of experience that this causes dramatic damage. So that's why you had to ventilate it. And then we moved to vapor permeable membranes. So now you have been able to fully insulate the rafter space. And this is how we turned, with the 40 millimeter difference, that's how we turned a cold roof into a warm roof, because you didn't ventilate insulation anymore. So it's pretty important for me to clarify it. So we have two typical roof structures, but they're still both warm roofs. Our truss roof is a typical cold roof.
So can I ask
what
a question?
What else do you need to add to that?
Metal rafters.
Metal rafters, if you put insulation on the outside.
Silly
fine.
Idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Then.
But the structure is not ventilated. We're not talking about thermal bridging in this case, and the structure is not ventilated to outdoor air. That's the critical part. What the definition by the Dean standard says. I can actually quote it, because
so the cold and warm definition is.
The so the Dean standard, I can just quote it because of
ventilation.
I can quote it because I have the Dean standard in front of me. It says, a cold roof is a roof with a ventilated air layer between the thermal insulation and the roof covering or waterproofing layer. That's a clear definition what a cold roof is.
Sorry, Jess.
No, you're right. I think I'm a little bit delayed, or you guys are delayed, or something is a little bit
it's
delayed.
It's because you're
so
in South Australia, that's why.
Yeah. So, Dan, what you're saying is the definition is not about thermal bridging of the rafters. It's about where the air is moving. Is there a clear definition in that standard of a warm roof?
Sorry, again?
Sorry, is there a clear definition? There was a clear definition of a cold roof. Is there a clear definition of a warm roof as well?
Yeah, they have to figure it out. I just have to look through, because, of course, there are heaps and heaps of pages. But it's good, because you have a clear definition of what a cold roof is, and as long as you don't ventilate anymore, then it automatically makes it a warm roof. But have a quick look.
But this ventilation part is now a key part of our NCC, is that correct? In a roof space?
Yes.
Climate in a cold roof and a warm roof.
In climate zone 6, 7, and 8, yes.
So really, you can't build a cold roof, continually wrap it.
This is.
Let's go back to the raising of the hand things like we did last week, because that worked really well. Sorry, Matt, you go.
Brad. Brad, you can go first.
Sure. I was going to say, this is why this is always a really difficult conversation to have, because there's so much terminology around essentially the same sort of thing, because you can call it like cold roof, warm roof, conditioned roof, unconditioned, vented, unvented, and you're sort of mishmashing all those terms into talking about essentially the same sort of stuff.
How about you, Matt? Is Matt on mute or something?
He's muted himself.
Sorry, yeah, I was. Yeah, with the DIN standard.
Himself. Can't hear.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the DIN standard, Dan, does that apply to Australia? Is that a European code, or is that something that like Australia standards or NCC would actually refer to?
And with all the standards, Jesse will be significantly more professional and experienced than me, but I know the DIN standard means a German industry norm. But we know based on experience that very often the German industry norm, specifically in construction, then transferred to European norm, from European norm or from German directly to the ISO norm. And then more or less in Australia, we implement most of the ISO norms or some of the norms from the US. But I just try, because I really try to be clear here, that it actually helps us to understand what the difference is. And as we all really focus on the performance of a building, the performance of a structure, I think it's actually a standard which makes sense, I guess, for all of us. And it would be worthwhile following when we talk about the terminology, because it's very clear it's about insulation layer of the ventilation layer of the insulation and of the structure. And DIN stairs, for example, says that warm roofs are constructions without a ventilated air layer between its thermal insulation and the roof covering or waterproofing layer. So we have these two clear definitions. I would like to see that we just take it as it is, because I think it's applicable for Australia. And as it is also like in the building code that we have ventilation requirements, in my personal opinion, it clearly falls into the cold roof category. So I think it's actually not contradictive as how we do things in Australia from the building physics perspective. Now I would like to know what your opinions are.
Yes, Jess, over to you.
Just before we get, I mean, this is a building science conversation, but I just, if you in the chat weren't aware of roof ventilation requirements in 6, 7, and 8, can you maybe let us know? Because that's pretty important to understand, I think. Would everyone else agree? If there's people here who don't understand what that is?
I was going to say that before, Jess, do you think you could maybe just in a short description, like, let everybody know what the actual current minimum requirements are for insulating and ventilating our roof spaces? Or am I throwing you under the deep end there? Maybe that's a Cam question.
Cam's going to have to back me up here. I can give you the roof ventilation requirements. I'll just pull them up. Ventilation of roof spaces is clause 10.8.3 in the volume 2 of the NCC 2022. The requirements are in climate zone 6, 7, and 8, which is everywhere, all of Victoria, a lot of New South Wales, Tasmania, and South Australia, the colder areas in South Australia, so the Adelaide Hills and down south in the Fulurio Peninsula, the colder areas. So there are, there's a figure in the building code that tells you exactly what the ventilation requirements are. So it's based on roof pitch. So anything under 10 degrees, because based on the idea that a lower roof pitch moves air more slowly, requires a larger area of opening at the low point and high point of a roof. So I hope I don't butcher this explanation, but under 10 degrees, I'm reading from the code here, 25,000 square millimeters per meter should be provided, opening area, at the low point and the high point of a roof. Between 10 and 15 degrees, it should be 25,000 square millimeters per meter provided at the low point, and 5,000 millimeters per square meter, 5,000 square millimeters per meter at the ridge or the high point. For anything above 15 degrees, it should be 7,000 square millimeters per meter at the low point and 5,000 at the high point, plus an additional 18,000 square millimeters per meter at the eaves if the roof has a cathedral ceiling. Basically, what this means is the lower the roof pitch, the more opening area you need to ventilate. And the reason for this is avoiding condensation and mold within a roof space. So these are all going to be cold roofs. Feel free to chime in, anyone.
Justin, you had your hand up before.
We sort of jumped ahead of where we were at about the definitions and what Dan was discussing in the DIN. Jess explained that was relatively clear. I guess that's a pretty simple explanation of what it is.
That's the basic side of it. There's other requirements around if you use a roof blanket or a vapor permeable membrane, and roof heights above the insulation has to be 20 mil. And there's various other rules in here, but I just wanted to explain the openable area. Yeah. For various roof pitches, just in case anyone on the call wasn't aware of these clauses.
And that
I might throw it to, if I can. Sorry, Justin, I was just going to throw it to Sean for a second, if he's able to, or even Dylan, from a practical builder's point of view, of how you would potentially go about executing a cold roof because I know, Sean, you have done some in the past. I've seen you on social media execute some cold roof scenarios. So, you know, Jess was great in explaining, you know, those all the volume that it needs to move. But what does that look like in a practical sense? How have you executed that in the past in some of your projects?
Well, for all the architects listening, it's a lot easier if you put eaves on the building, like, because it's easy to do like a weather resistant inlet if it's sheltered by an eave. So we're seeing the rise of eaves dropping off buildings, which is like a fucking pain in the ass to build, but that's why we're great builders, right? Because we can do, when you draw that nice looking shit. But yeah, we're sort of just using ventilation, like aluminium powder coated ventilation mesh, because it looks pretty good architecturally. And we're running that continuously all the way around the eaves. The current one that we're doing at the moment didn't have an eave, so we made an eave like 100 mil so that we could get that ventilation in there. Does that sort of answer your question?
Yeah, it was just more just to, I guess, put into context from like a practical sense of how you would do it on site, because, you know, stating what the code's asking us to do is one thing, but actually executing is another thing. Dylan, I know you come up with some pretty cool ventilation strategies.
Yeah, I think maybe there's a bit of a difference to kind of what we do from a ventilation point of view and what the code's requesting. So the code's stating ventilation of the attic space, and all of our vents are venting above the sheathing. Sean, is that what yours is doing as well?
Yeah, so the above sheathing ventilation is separate to what we're doing in the eaves ventilation. So there's the ventilation strategy for managing the condensation that happens on the underside of the iron. There's also the ventilation strategy that's happening below that weather resistant barrier in that cold attic space or truss space. Truss space is probably more helpful for people. We don't call them attics here all that
often. So you've got a break essentially in that external wrap that's pulling air in to the attic space from the eave.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a massive fan of what the code's stating to do in this scenario. I think it's not ideal. And I think the reason they've kind of put it in there is because there's no strict requirements for air tightness yet. So we're getting a lot of hot, humid air added to the building, you know, on average 2.5 litres per day from a person that gets added to the building that's getting up into the ceiling space. And then we're worried about getting that out through these eaves. So I think if you build airtight, with a completely airtight ceiling, the risk profile reduces heavily for this ventilation requirement. And yeah, we do a lot of kind of your warm roof or the hybrid sort of approach, which is, you know, insulated with pitched roof, or a lot of our retrofit projects will run a wood fiber panel on top as well. So a bit of in the rafter cavity and over. And then your air tightness is up at below the rafter height as well. And I think that's kind of the safest approach as far as condensation management. And you're not having to bring potentially moist air into the building through these vents, like Cam talked about last week, or last month, I should say.
Cameron. Okay, thanks. Just a couple of thoughts on the, firstly on the code. So what Jess read out there about those areas, what really shits me about the code is that there's never a reference that sources where these numbers come from. You have to try to dig through various, you know, sources wherever they may be, and context matters. So I always want to know what the source is. And I just want to wish we could go back to a sort of an academic style. If you're going to make have a sentence that says do this, footnote it and say the source for that is this, so one can look into it and work out whether that's actually relevant for your particular use case, which partly comes to Dylan's point that if you're going for an airtight ceiling level, then does that change the scenario? And the second one is just to note that the openings have got to be bigger at the lower end of the roof than the upper end. And it's important, I think, to note that in whatever we do, because if you do it in reverse, you make the ridge openings larger than the eave openings, and you risk depressurizing that roof space, and you'll encourage any air movement from within the building envelope to get up through that ceiling, and then you'll actually potentially exacerbate the problem by drawing that warm, moist air up into that roof space. So it is important you get that balance right of having more openings at the low end than the upper end.
Maddie?
So just going back to what I was going to say originally, it as by code right now in the NCC, we can't build a cold roof and completely wrap it with membrane and be compliant with the NCC. Is everyone shaking their heads like, no, that's impossible?
Yeah, right, just...
And is there any, and this is what goes back to Cam's point on data.
6, 7, and 8.
Yeah, okay. So, or if you're in a bushfire area, which makes no sense then because you can have it and then you can't have it. Like, no one cared to think about why it works
but,
in one area, not
Dan,
the other.
Is it correct? Sorry, I haven't put my hand up. Jesse said that the Jesse Clark, for those of you who don't know, he's the technical guy at ProClimber. He told me once that the whole mold issue inside roof spaces started in bushfire zones because they were all completely sealed up to prevent embers from getting in. And these are often cold climates, like bushy climate zone, bushy areas that are cold, and this is where the problem started.
Yeah, I think it's like we're still looking for more evidence because, of course, everyone keeps it quiet. But if you type in as one of these Bell offset buildups, if you drop them into a woofy, of course, you can imagine it's a massive disaster because you seal everything up. You have thermal mass on the outside, two layers of FC sheet, eventually plus aluminium foil, et cetera, et cetera. So Jesse is super busy now. I could have asked him too. But yeah, but it's not how it started because like, the where the coat with the 20 millimeters above the primary insulation layer actually more or less came off typically Tassie problems because like Tasmania is in general a bit colder and you guys you stepped away from aluminium foil a bit earlier than the rest of Australia because specifically if you have a chat with Mark Dewsbury, he did heaps of research and he pushed it quite hard because all the issues with aluminium foil on the roof is massive. And like with ventilating the roof spaces, try to minimize the risk. And I just want to say again with warm roof versus cold roof, and I know it won't happen soon, but still like in most parts of the Western world, we use a truss roof for coverage for land machines. So you wouldn't use a truss roof in your house because it's not very the best and logical way how to build a roof. Of course, you can use small timber dimensions, but overall, the struggles it brings, like with putting the insulation into the right location, losing all the ceiling space, et cetera, which you could use as storage, et cetera, is a topic. So, yeah, but that's me throwing in the spanner, which Matthew, pretty sure he's going to smile now. If you
yeah, but like if so where I'm getting at is like so if we now need to vent a cold roof and allow air to get back in because people aren't using a product like Intallo or an intelligent membrane, we're now just increasing the air tightness. We're pretty much the houses are becoming leakier again. Are we just not going backwards even further, and then producing cold spots through the house?
That's exactly what I wrote down too for later discussion because I thought this question would maybe come like in 20 minutes, half an hour. But yeah, of course, because like we have heaps of builders all over Australia who build pretty airtight with Exasana Mento only. And I think it's in most climates not an issue, really depends on where you are. But if you now start ventilating your roof spice, you're really taking away all the benefits of using the external membranes as an airtight layer. So now we come specifically in-house here because we are like, I don't know how to say, like an airtight chunky, but like we love our airtightness layer. So now there's the question, should we just install Intallo on the ceiling and not on the walls? And yeah, my hairs are definitely standing up because like envelope should be always holistic and continuous. Could it work if you do it right? as we have these discussions in-house over and over again, because you know you might have a chance to get the Intel on the ceiling and not on the walls, compared to convince everyone or a higher amount of people to actually use it all over the place. And overall, what we do here, we actually want to be able to get more healthier homes widely available for everyone in Australia, and not just for a small minority on the market. And I think we all agree, isn't it? So what's the minimum way to get the best out of it?
Patiently over there. Throw it over to you, mate.
Is that you, Brad?
Yeah. So I was going to say to Sean, he touched on what he's doing to ventilate at the base, but what are you doing at the top? Are you leaving an opening in your roof membrane at the ridge?
Oh, yeah. So we leave a gap at the ridge, cut it back, like we wrap it up fully and then cut it out 100 mil. It's got to be careful where you put your noggins, not too close to the top of the ridge, like you nog out a ridge line, and then that's like inhibiting the ventilation. So chop that out, and then we'll put the counter batten on at the top, and then another bit of wrap over that, and then the final batten. So it's like, it's a hole, but it's a weather tight hole, if that makes sense.
Yeah. 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 I think that's just something that doesn't really get touched on. Like a lot of people see ventilation at the eaves, don't really consider how it vents at the top, other than, you know, your vented and ridge on the metal roof.
Yeah. And then, so we wrap the hips over and only come 900 down from the hips and split it. So, because you only really count that 900 mil down from the ridge line for your ventilation. So that's when you're working out your ventilation requirements. You can't just go, oh, I've got a hip and a ridge cap that runs all the way down. You don't really count that 900 mil down from the ridge line. That's my understanding of it anyway.
This just sounds so stupid doing it this way. Like, it's so much effort and time and cost.
Right on, Matt.
Continuously.
Don't be negative.
Yeah, but you're forgetting that the building code's written to the lowest common denominators, Matt.
This code has been put in there by the truss manufacturers to cover their ass and BlueScope Steel so they can keep their product without any membranes.
I think it's there because it's cheap. It's cost effective. Like, it's a.
I've got Justin and Dan nodding their heads here and smiling.
Yeah.
No, I just wanted to ask if I can just bluntly sneak in, because some of you came to the roadshow Jesse and I did 1.5 years ago, and actually recordings from Jesse's presentation, my presentation actually had a bunch of details like eave and top ventilation, and how actually there's a whole chapter just about wall and roof ventilation. So it's on the Proclaimer YouTube channel. You can still watch it. But I think it's the best we internally as Proclaimer have at the moment, because we just put everything together in one presentation. So I think like for eave ventilation, like you have around 10, 12 different details, even more eventually. Bad ones too, but mainly good ones. So I think it's worthwhile checking out. And someone just mentioned that, of course, like when we talk about the rich detail, we have, I think, 2 or 3 details on the Mentor application guide.
Cameron, you've got your hand up waiting there patiently.
I think Justin was actually ahead of me. Justin, you want to go first?
I've forgotten what I put my hand up for, Cam. there's plenty to talk about. The eave details, all those ventilation details. There's something pretty exciting happening in Victoria at the moment. I won't say too much, but all those details will be on show in full scale on a full scale building in an expo like 1,000 square meter shed. So there's some interesting things happening at the end of this month. All of those things are being developed, and all of those things are going to be in place for everyone to crawl over and have a look at on a full-scale building, which is pretty exciting to see. But, we're just trying to work on something to try and standardise some things. We work to very high standards on our construction, but we still do need to assist the wider industry, and they're going to laugh at our details. And they'll say, not in a million years. So I always say baby steps, incremental change.
Is it a whirly bird? Are you putting whirly birds in the ceiling?
Like your house, yeah. Yeah, you've got a couple of those, don't you?
Yeah, I've got some performance membranes, actually.
Actually, performance membranes have, got a few things going on down there too. So, I was going back to, I like to look at where does the line in the sand of the code. We sit well above that, as Dil said before. I like to dig deeper and go, well, okay, where is the line? And at the end of the day, it's going to be the building surveyor that is signing off, and it's up to them to determine how they interpret the code. So I've been discussing some of these terms in the code with a technical advisory group who made them. And one key two words in 10.83, which I'd refer to as it's immediately above. What does that mean? It's very interesting. I've got the take of the people who put it in there. And it doesn't mean directly in contact with. Immediately above does not mean in contact with. So, I mean, yeah, we know what we do, but if you go to the code, you don't have to put sarking on the roof if you've got 20 mil cavity. You don't have to put it in there. It's simply you don't have to have it. That's not a good weather barrier. Immediately above, I'm sitting in this room and the ceiling's immediately above me. So I'm going back to what Matt said about ceiling roofs. Technically, ceiling a coal roof could be deemed DTS. If you've got your 20 mil gap above your class 4 vapor film membrane and the insulation, there's nothing in between. So would a building surveyor say that's okay? Of course not. So, it's just maybe a waste of my energy even thinking about it. But I sort of like to get bogged down in that stuff and sort of see where the line is.
Cameron?
Just kind of say, reiterate the obvious, a dead building, it doesn't matter how energy efficient a dead building is, and the vapor gradient, the vapor pressure at the roof is always going to be greater than that at the walls, because warm air rises and probably more pertinently, moist air rises. And so the most moist point in a building will be right under the ridge, assuming it's, a clearly open envelope. So it is, in my view, worth us going to the effort, to Dan's point of, is it worth us putting something like a vapor control membrane at the ceiling plane if we're not doing it at the walls? In my view, generally speaking, yes, it would be, because I'm trying to control the rates. I'm trying to make sure that the rate at which vapor is driving up through that ceiling is less than the rate of drying out through my vapor permeable membrane at the roof. And as long as I can ensure that that rate of drying is greater than the rate of wetting, then I'm feeling much more comfortable, regardless of whether the insulation is flat at the ceiling plane or hard up amongst the rafters.
I guess it's keeping the continuity of that barrier cam. That happens and has been specified in buildings with low slope roofs in Tasmania for a very long time, for years and years and years. It's very common to see architectural designs that have an Intello-like product at the ceiling level. Detailing it, there's no education, so that's the hard bit. You need to seal all your cable holes through the top plates. It needs to be sealed, and keeping that continuity is critical. Otherwise, you actually create a problem, an explosion of water vapor in locations that are sort of, local to one room. So is it better to diffuse it through all of it? I guess if that was the case, then it would be okay, but it's not, because buildings aren't continuous. Ceilings aren't continuous. So by controlling with vapor control layers, we could do that. And I'm almost certain that the mold risk is not there. I'm actually studying it at the moment because there hasn't been really any credible data on that. I believe University of Wollongong did some, but I would like to do some more in-depth analysis with UTAS, which I'm doing at the moment, and it's actually doing it on my own home. So that has Intello, and there's a lot of science data with the building, so it's a credible building to analyse. But yeah, I guess my partner's and my business in Victoria, he has the same setup, the cold sealed roof, and he can access his attic, and there isn't any mold in it. He's been up there many a times. So yeah, but the default position is to exhaust it out, the vapor that can't diffuse through the pliable membranes in the roof should be expelled through ventilation gaps. That's where they're at.
Yeah, and I think, having that evidence clearly shows that when you build airtight, you're not going to have issues and you really don't need to ventilate that space. It's only when you're building a crappy, leaky house where you got downlights and light fittings taking all your moist air into the space where you're going to have a risk profile. So
unless
it's kind
you're
of
in
a bit
tropics,
of
right?
a workaround. Yeah, exactly. But it's probably just a bit of a workaround so people can still keep building leaky buildings and try and get away for a bit longer. But I think to blanket the whole building, all of the classes 6, 7, and 8, regardless if you're doing air tightness or not, with those ventilation requirements is a bit of a failure from the code.
Does this come back to adding a HRV? Like, Justin, the case that you're talking about, the same as your business partner, Devin, and I know I've got two projects, the exact same build-up. I know Brad can also talk about it because he jumped into a roof that he built his parents with. Like, they're all the same cold roof, completely sealed system. Is that because we have a HRV?
I guess that's an ingredient that assists with the internal moisture load in buildings, which I think that's probably the next biggest step in the NCC is reducing the internal vapor load in buildings. All the performance requirements are going to drive designers to use vapor control layers. Obviously, we're looking at the DTS potentially failing the performance requirements in these very climate zones. So that's a real problem. Essentially, the architects and designers are thrown under the bus. So if you can't meet the performance requirement and you follow the DTS, you've got a non-compliant building. And that's what some things are going through courts at the moment about. So, that's what my study is all about. I want to prove that it is possible if you build this way. Will it make any changes in the short term? Of course not. But having that data, I think, is important to make informed decisions in the codes later on.
Maybe just a quick one, because regarding the background, the thing is, like, and I agree with Justin, the thing is why it is so difficult to get it in code, because WUFI is in code, but you can't calculate still standing air. So we had this issue also in Germany when you retrofit roofs. You can't calculate because it's actually a microclimate. So these programs can't calculate thicker air, still standing air and thicker air void. So for this reason, kind of, as we don't have a clear answer what will happen in your roof cavity, that's why it's the easy way out to be safe. Okay, then you ventilate. If you don't know, you ventilate. Even Germany still, we say, like, okay, you heat it or you ventilate to outdoor air. So these are the two requirements, because you can't calculate it. And that's the thing, is kind of, how do you quantify it? Because then if you bring different vapor control air on the market, they act quite differently. Then they're fundamentally different. So how do you draw the line if you can't actually prove it using the verification method? And we in the building code, we just have DTS or verification method. And the verification method can't jump in because it's at this date not possible. So that's why I think it's also, like, difficult, because who would ever sign it off if you can't even figure out what's going to happen in the future? So it's, but I agree with you, Justin. So I don't think it's not... I think it will work, but specifically B, because like we as Proclama, we are liable what's happening. So how you install your membranes and what guidelines you follow. So we have to be very strict and very clear so we know it won't fail.
You had your hand up before, mate.
Yeah, I'm a bit lost now about what I was meaning to say. I do have a project that's the same as Justin and Devin's. I don't have Intello on the ceiling, but we detailed the plasterboard to be a secondary air control layer with external membrane. We were 0.4 ACH, so it's pretty airtight. There is a pretty low moisture load on the building. There's just two occupants. So potentially that has a little bit of an impact on how much moisture is getting in there. On the topic of just having Intello at the ceiling line, my last project, the air control on the walls was the outside layer of the lime render of the hempcrete. So we just transitioned it across to the Intello ceiling, which without volunteer hempcreters, it's actually not that difficult a detail to do. Sean does it pretty well on his projects as well. So it's certainly not that challenging to run a strip across the top of the wall before you install your trusses to tie your membrane from the wall into an Intello ceiling, which obviously is going to help heaps. Probably one thing that you see a little bit is people not really understanding what a smart vapor control layer is and what that product is, and I've actually seen people use any wrap they can get their hands on in that scenario, which I think opens up a whole nother can of worms as well.
Question for Cameron, because we've actually got a job at the moment which Cam's been working on. It's an old Alice Setups building where we're going to be insulating above the existing rafters and pine lining. So if you can imagine quite a low pitched roof, we've got existing rafters, pine lining, and then we're building up on top of that for insulation. Then we've got ply, heel and stick membrane, and then our cavity battens and roof on top of it. But Cameron, you suggested during that pre-construction phase to put Intello over the top of the pine lining. I actually know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you the question for the benefit of everyone. What was your reasoning for wanting us to put that airtight intelligent membrane there, given that we've got OSB and Adhero above that?
Yeah, so again, it's like rate control. So on the warm side, I want to stop the rate at which vapor can move towards the cold side. And if the cold side of my construction is a peel and stick vapor permeable membrane like Adhero, it's stuck to a substrate, which is, you know, everyone argues about what the vapor permeability of a particular OSB or ply may be, but it's clearly a vapor retarder. It's not a highly, you know, it's not a class four membrane, if we want to use that sort of language on it. So the risk is that if I don't have that internal throttle, which the Intello is forming that function of slowing the rate at which vapor moves through, then I risk getting an accumulation at my substrate because it just can't move out through the Adhero and the ply or OSB combination at a rate that's greater than the rate at which it can accumulate. And in that particular project, like so many retrofits, there's so many other compromises going on that your risk calculation is just getting worse and worse. And you're thinking, I've got to do something here to try and ameliorate the risks as much as possible. And I come back to what I was trying to allude to before. The roof is always the highest risk part of our construction because that's where the moisture is predominantly trying to go.
You also had your hand up before, Cam. You got anything to add before I throw it over to Dylan?
Yeah, I did. Can't remember. I'll remember later.
Still, over to you, bud. You got yourself on mute there, mate.
Worth just maybe talking about the other benefits associated with the warm roof. Obviously, you've bring in this nice conditioned attic space, which you can add to the internal environment, and running HRV ducts. obviously these ducts are an uninsulated setup. So if you're running a cold roof, you either want to be dropping your ceiling 140 mil to keep those on the inside of the thermal envelope, which then can obviously reduce your ceiling levels. So, yeah, it's all we always push for that kind of warm roof hybrid so we can run all the ducts through the existing attic space and just leaves a bit more ceiling area to work with.
Do you also punch a couple of access panels in there so you can use that area as volume to get your ACH better?
Well, yeah, it's always calculated as your volume because of that, the air tightness is on the bottom of the rafters, so certainly helps.
Yeah. Maddie, you had your hand up.
Can someone explain to me if Anticon is a warm roof? Because we're insulating on top of everything.
Oh, my God. Oh, okay. My God.
Can someone just mute Matt?
Well, people listen use the product, and I wanted to explain it.
They use it in commercial construction all the time with Ascot Spaces. They have, but you need to have the loft, but it's a vapor barrier. So you've got some issues, and you can't weatherproof it properly. It has massive issues. I think we should end it there.
I'm just going to read something from the limitations of use on the Anticon technical statement. And I found this quite interesting. This product is not designed to withstand exposures to the elements. Obviously, it's a fiberglass product. As soon as it gets wet, it's cooked. It must be installed dry and remain dry until the roof is complete. It is recommended that the exterior cladding and all closing flashings to be installed within the same workday to comply for the product.
So wait, it says it can't get wet during construction, but it can get wet after it?
No. It says it can't get wet ever, but it also says you need to flash the roof and put the roof on all in the same day to comply with the warranty.
Has any builder ever had a roofer that's come in and completed their job in the one day? Ever?
Well, you can't measure the flashings until the roof's on. So unless they're making their own flashings on site on the same day, you can't comply. That's just one minor issue with the product along with a range of other problems.
Cam, Justin and Dan, you're pretty quiet on this topic.
I love it because that's why we sell it, isn't it? Ah, no, sorry. Now, for me, like, as we talk about performance, that's, of course, a tricky one. And by definition, you don't ventilate your roof space. It would be warm roof. But you still end up with massive condensation and moisture issues. So technically, it could be a warm roof if you just bluntly and blind-eyed following what the DIN standard says. Technically, it's not ventilated, so it should be right, mate.
Brad, you've got your hand up too, mate. I'll throw it over to you.
Yeah, I just was going to add a little bit about the project you were talking about, Hamish, with Cam. In the US, obviously, they fully sheathe all of their roofs regardless. And the vast majority of their roofs are asphalt, which is obviously a massive vapor retarder, vapor barrier. But when they are doing a vented roof, they're installing vapor diffusion ports at the top, so leaving a cutout of their structural sheathing at the ridge. And some builders are covering that with a pliable membrane. There's a product from Dorkin called Delta Fox, which is 550 perms, so like extremely vapor permeable. But I have seen a few things where they're using just a Tyvek house wrap, which is about 50 perms, which is still a little bit more than Mento, although it's really hard to calculate that all because everyone runs off like a different testing and reporting standard for the permeability numbers. But is it ever a consideration when we're doing roofs now, especially lower pitched roofs, where you've got more risk of that vapor load just going straight up, as opposed to, you know, a higher pitch where it's going to make its way to the ridge faster, would we ever consider at the ridge of a low pitched roof using a vapor diffusion port as well, if it is even still just a hybrid roof or a cold vented roof?
Yeah, if I can jump in on there, Brad. So if you got a, is there a rigid sheathing board in your imaginary build up there, like a plier or an OSB?
Isn't there one on Hamish's roof that you were talking about?
There was an pre-existing lining boards, yeah.
So pre-existing lining OSB boards, on the but no OSB on the exterior.
There is on the outside, yeah, to which the peel and the stick is affixed.
Yeah, but you were saying
my concern with it. Yeah, I'd argue a vapor diffusion port then only probably makes sense if you've got a decent pitch to the roof.
Yeah.
This particular roof was, what, 2 or under 5 degrees, I think. So other than trying to flash it up at the top end, it's probably with that, it's not going to do a great deal. But I certainly think if you're, like, to me, the best roof is like the perfect wall, run flat, lo and behold. So if I've got rafters or truss, and then I put a sheathing on top, put a peel and stick on it, I put exterior insulation, wood fiber, stone wall, something like that, vapor permeable. And then if it's a pitched roof, a classic pitched roof like this, maybe I'll set off my ply or OSB a bit. And then rather than run the peel and stick over, we just run a class 4 membrane at the top, which is your vapor diffusion port. Then I whack my rigid vapor permeable insulation on top of that, possibly another membrane, counterbatten, batten, roof sheet. And then I'm keeping, you know, to this definitional question, setting aside the question of what the standard says, that to me is a intuitively warm roof in the sense that all of my sensitive materials are being kept in the conditioned space. That is the least likely system ever to go wrong, but also probably the most expensive roof you can build.
And the best looking roof too, huh?
Bloody oath. Too right, Dan?
It's a really great solution. To Dylan's point, it's a really great solution for retrofits because you're kind of limited as to, you know, where you actually can insulate if you want to leave some of the stuff, all the plaster and stuff on the inside. So I actually think it's an amazing solution for a retrofit.
Yeah, it's got a lot going for it. And you can get that airtightness continuity because you're hitting it from the outside of the building. You're not having to muck around with all that existing structure on the interior.
Yeah, it's good to note as well that with that assembly, we did the first stage of a retrofit all from above. We didn't have to go into the house at all. So theoretically, the occupants could still live in the building whilst you do that roof assembly from outside.
General, I don't know how it is with our audience in here because, like, I think I said it in the previous emails, like I did like 20 years plus like retrofitting roofs in Germany. So I could, because I have the German Air Proclaimer website open where we have heaps of different systems. If you guys are interested, I could quickly run through because they're pretty cool systems which we haven't heard of in Australia. And they can be pretty simple for retrofitting roofs, existing roofs, from the inside or from the outside. Just if you have the time and if there's the interest. Otherwise, everyone can check out the German or international website itself.
I'd be keen to listen to that.
Can I ask if we change this to a... because we've been talking about cold climates for a while, and I know I said at the start, Justin, about warmer climates. We do have someone here in climate zone 2, so quite humid. What changes here?
There's no requirement in climate zone 2 to ventilate a cold roof. And if we did, we'd be bringing in warm, moist air. I think they flagged that a few years ago when they brought this in New Zealand, in North Island, where it was becoming problematic and they were trying to overturn the code because they flagged that it's introducing a problem because you've got warm, moist air being introduced into the building and it's actually elevating the humidity inside the attic space and creating issues and good conditions for mold growth.
So you're saying we should only have a warm roof?
A warm roof? Well,
yeah,
a warm roof is a great idea. It's more expensive. It's what we always used to do. We always used to pitch roofs. Now it's trusses. Probably they don't even teach kids to cut trusses anymore and creepers and cripple creepers. But we always are always up against the codes and our tools that we have. And building in a warm roof style or a conditioned room, conditioned space, we've got to deal with Nather's modelling limitations. So you get the volume penalty. So you have more volume and Nather's cannot handle that. And then the star rating will drop if that's what you're using. We've seen it on quite a few jobs. I think maybe Sean said it last month about it. I was listening in. So you can move the insulation up to the rafter level and the volume is then entered into Nather's and it has a fit. I think, Jess, you use Nather's, don't you, or one of those Hero or one of those
Kate programs? Kate uses it all the time.
I don't use Nather's anymore.
So they have a bit of an issue. We've had a few projects in Tassie where we have done that because they've got HRV, so it's like, okay, easy. It's easier for construction. But then there was a project in the north of the state that was 8.1 stars and it dropped to 5.9 just from moving the insulation. It was incredible. We had another one in the south, but the energy assessor contacted Ciro. And I don't know how much I probably should be saying, but they advised to model it with insulation on the ceiling. And they had it in writing. So obviously it covers the assessor because if they are audited and they model it that way, they will be in trouble. So, you need that documentation.
And this is why Nather's is not reliable.
Yeah, we had a very similar project like that and we just had to be transparent and say, look, we need to just put it on the plans to get the stamp for Nather's, but we're not doing it. And it was just, the makeups we had for those warm roofs were extreme and, air tightness below 0.4 HRV and we're not passing the minimum Nather's rating. It's just broken.
Cam, looks like you're biting your tongue.
In Melbourne now, you still have to do both the Nather's and the PHPP, but in New South Wales, if I'm not wrong, you can just do the PHPP. So they've kind of given us grace there that they've identified it's a legit energy method. So it's about time Victoria did the same, I think.
We just spent all our money on machete bins. We've got no budget left.
If you think Nather's is problematic, you should see the Bassett's energy thing in New South Wales. That's a bit of a joke. But it is handy that we can use the PHPP up there as an alternative compliance pathway. I just wanted to jump back to one thing that Dylan, you said a while ago, actually, which was just about the volume. And, if you go for a warm roof, that you could count that volume as part of your VN50 or your volume when you do your air tightness test. That's actually not correct in Passive House. So just to clarify that, you've got VN50, which is what you use for your air tightness testing. And that's to the interior face of your linings, so your floorboards, your plaster on the wall, and your plaster at the ceiling. If you have a flat ceiling and then you're insulating and running your air tightness up the pitch further up and you've got that conditioned void up there, that's a ventilation volume, so that's part of the VV. You've got to, as Henrik pointed out, you've got to have HRV up there if it's on an average of over 1 meter height, but it doesn't come into your air change rate that you're going to use in your blower door test. So you're actually making your life in a way a little bit harder because you've got more, your air tightness surface area is greater, so there's more gaps going to be in there, even though you're not getting the advantage of the volume that comes from that. But that's just the rules and the way in which it's calculated. Back to you, Hamish.
Yeah, so I was probably thinking that maybe we should wrap it up. I guess I just wanted to get like a general consensus from all the people that are sitting here, about what they would prefer to do, like whether it's a cold roof or a warm roof, or is it a depending on the project? Sean, I might go to you first. Like, what's your preference when it comes to warm roof versus cold roof?
I think warm roof is fundamentally better. It's less builder risk long term. But I think cold roof can be done. You've just got some certain conditions. You probably want to have like an airtight ceiling. That's a really good thing to have. So you're not sucking air, like ventilating this space and sucking air through your downlights and all the penetrations and shit like that. So you probably want to have an airtight ceiling. You don't really want your mechanical services located in the cold roof space. Efficiency is one thing, but it's more like that they leak that warm moist, like they leak the venom out into the roof to make you get condensation. And then insulation baffles at the eave line, that's something that you want to consider as well, like so you're not at the low part of the roof, so that you're not degrading the performance of your insulation. And then looking at how complex the roof geometry is, because you can put all the eave vents and ridge vents in that you want, but if your roof is like highly architectural and physics isn't going to allow it to vent well, then that's probably something that you want to consider. But like the cold roofs are cheaper to do, but I feel like you just got to consider what you're actually up against, because it's not just it says there's a cold roof and there's eave vents. It's like, okay, well, what's the position of this? Do I have an airtight ceiling? How am I going to do the baffles? That sort of thing.
I was about to say there's probably a whole conversation around architecturally designed buildings and why they fail, but maybe we'll leave that for another topic. Justin, what about you?
I still come back to the wording, and I think to avoid confusion, I get what you say, Dan, and I would like to see us align globally, but we are 25 years behind, 20 to 30 years behind. So I think that our wording of these roofs needs to align better, so the language better reflects the NCC, the intent of the 10.8, and NATHERS language. So we talk about conditioned roof spaces and unconditioned roof spaces. So NATHERS refers to unconditioned and conditioned roof spaces, even if the interface doesn't name them that way. So I think to keep it simple, that's where we should be at this point in time. And I am a warm roof guy.
So it's non-compliant. What
about you, Jess? I live in a 40-year-old house at the minute, and I have a cold roof up there, and the insulation is just filled with dirt and leaf litter. So my vote is for a skillion style roof with the insulation at the rafter level or above. Costs obviously come into that, but energy efficiency for me is important, but keeping my roof space free of debris and things that are going to get into my lungs is also pretty important, as well as keeping those air pockets in the insulation still so that the R value can actually work the way it's supposed to. So yeah, I'm a warm roof girl.
What about you, Dan?
Yeah, my laptop is cooking, so I didn't hear what the last comments have been, but I'm guessing we still what we will build. I'm 100% pro warm roof and exposed rafters for multiple reasons, because being a chippy, I want to have full control of my building sites. And that means kind of, for me, an exposed rafter roof is the nicest one. It's from the building physics perspective. It works in every climate zone. Eventually, you have to change the performance of the membranes, but the system is the same. It's the best looking. And we as chippies, we have full control about the timeline. And for me, like, pre-cutting rafters and erecting rafters is the nicest job you can have. And that's why I did it dozens and dozens of times. And I actually really miss it because it's great fun. It's the nicest work you can do as a chibi. There's nothing better, even better than framing.
So is that assuming you've got your rafters and then ply your peel and stick membrane and then wood fiber on top of that?
Oh, it doesn't even have to be a peel and stick membrane. So you just usually, like in a colder climate, you would have rafters with all the nitty-gritty stuff, then exposed boards when you have some nice tongue and groove boards. Then most of the times, actually, DA is enough, depends on the climate zone, or you would go with Intello. In this case, you should use the Intello X layer because they're actually trafficable. Then you put some wood fiber on the outside. If you use the right materials like this thicker wood fiber boards and you're above 15 degrees, you don't even need an additional membrane. And you just fix your counterbattens right through. So you just need one membrane layer and you just build the rest of the roof with natural materials, highly vapor permeable, weather tight, and yeah.
Awesome. Bradley, what about you?
I'm happy to do either or as long as it's done well. I think a low-pitched roof, you're probably always going to do a warm roof because you can pretty much, you know, if it's low pitch and trusses, you can probably just fill the entire truss with insulation and call it a day without much labor. On a house that doesn't have a really wide ceiling span, it's not that much extra or that much more challenging to insulate at the rafters and have a hybrid roof assembly. But if you've got a massively wide building, that's a huge difference, you know, and you're aiming for a flat ceiling, there's a huge difference in labor and material cost to insulate at the top. And that's before we go to external insulation. Obviously here in Australia, we're a long, long way off external insulation being mainstream and being a cost-effective solution. So for the interim, yeah, it's just about detailing things and executing correctly. Obviously, like Sean said, you know, a lot of it comes down to the design of the building. A highly complex roof, you'd be stupid to try and vent it anyway. So it really comes down to design. And if budget is a constraint, then maybe the architects need to take a back seat and it just needs to be a very simple structure to build.
Matthew.
Warm roof. Everyone else said.
Love it. Dylan.
Yeah, look, working on retrofits, warm roof makes sense. Wood fiber over the top. Insulate the raster cavity. Intello underneath. Yeah, I think it's a great way to go. A little bit more labor intensive, but there's so many benefits that it starts to stack up pretty quick.
And then last but not least, Cameron.
I think the cold roof is going to be the mass market solution, but it's got to be ventilated, that roof space, in accordance with that NCC requirement 10.83. That's for those of us doing more sophisticated construction, a warm roof is definitely the way to go. But then the question is whether you have that exterior insulation, and if so, what is the ratio of the insulation on the exterior of the assembly to that within the rafter? Because although we'd love to just do entirely exterior insulation, that's going to cost a bomb. So more than likely you end up with let's call it a hybrid solution, as Dylan is doing, where you're putting some glass wall between the rafters and then some wood fiber or whatever, vapor permeable rigid insulation on the exterior. And if you go to something like your hygrothermal modeling, like Woofy, if you believe that, it makes a big difference. Even just with 40 mil of wood fiber on the outside of your roof deck, it really changes the whole dynamics of that, of the timber structure underneath.
Can I just add one thing? Sorry, yeah. Home.
Yep. No, you go.
Yeah, Dan mentioned wood fiber, no external wrap. And I thought of Cam crawling over there thinking about the treated pine and non-treated conversation we had last week. Cam, what's your thoughts on no external wrap on wood fiber in the cavity?
depends on the roof pitch, as Dan said, because it's the joins, isn't it, in part? And the wood fibre's got, what is it, wax sort of coating to make it hydrophobic, isn't it, Dan? No?
Depends really on the manufacturer. So like the cheaper manufacturers, they have some kind of a coating on it, different materials. The original one, which because you have two different types of wood fiber boards, one is wet manufactured and the other one is dry manufactured. So the dry manufacturers, because they can produce thicker boards in one go, they most of the times they have a coating, but they also have like 3 to 5% polyurethane fibers just to hold the fibers together. The wet ones, which are actually the original ones, they can just maximally produce 20 millimeter thick boards. But by the production process, we have these two hot rolls pressing the fibers together. Actually, the top surface gets hygrophobic, not directly hygrophobic, but water repellent is the right word. So the means cover is pretty easy for water to run off and pretty difficult to hold on. So you don't have really, you have 100% wood fibers, just the different layers are glued together with PVA glue. But usually they're denser, so they're heavier and more expensive too. And the joints usually, so even if you install them in winter, you see sometimes they actually shrink up to 2 millimeters, so you have this gap. But I never had a roof, single roof leaking, even exposed to the weathers, because by the moment when water is sitting in the groove, so it's sitting in a groove before it actually comes in, and the wood fibers immediately start to expand and they actually seal it up again straight away.
Awesome. Well, my preference would be warm roof, but also it depends on what Cameron tells me to do. So that's my stance on it. I would generally revert to people that are a lot smarter than me. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today, and thanks for all the, I guess, experts that are have come on and given up their time for, I guess, educating and you know, having these discussions. We're really keen to throw this out to the audience to ask what you would like us to talk about. You know, you can pop it in the chat now, although we are going to stop in a second. But if you want to get in touch on any of our social media accounts, I know Cameron's really prolific on his social media. So by all means, jump in and send him a DM, or you can reach out to the Mindful Builder or Carlin or Dylan or Brad or whoever and suggest a topic.
Can I suggest one?
Suggest
one that's not a one versus insulate, the other. Yeah, insulating when we're retrofitting a double brick wall.
Matt wants us all to consult.
Not opposed to it.
Have something because like, there's something new in Germany, and it's like I just saw it somewhere and I couldn't believe it. It's like spray foam, but it's mineralic spray foam, but it's
not
spray foam.
We're not starting it now.
No, I'm still telling because maybe someone is interested in the stuff because I can't do it, but I was highly hyped when I saw it. So they actually use air pressure to expand the minerals. So there are no chemicals inside. Highly vapor permeable, and is specifically designed or built designed for insulating these kind of cavities because it doesn't block moisture, it releases moisture, and you don't have any nasty chemicals. It's just blown up minerals, actually, more or less. It's pretty awesome. And so slowly crawls into the cavity. So if someone want to be the first one, I would love to see someone of you guys raising their hands and we bring it to Australia because I think this could be...
Cork's awesome too. Dylan can agree on it. I reckon we should finish on this because there's an awesome comment in this section by Jake just then. And Haim, you can read it out.
Was it the one that Jake said here? That was brilliant. Seriously intelligent bunch. Much more exciting and interesting than the academic shit we have to listen to as architects for CPD points.
That's a bio.
That
for
wasn't
the show,
my quote. I'm just reading. Thanks everybody for joining us. And yeah, get in touch. We'll get in touch with us, and we'll throw a whole bunch of topics into a bucket, and we'll shake it around, and we'll pick one for next time. But we'll do another one in December, and then we'll probably late Jan. We'll jump back in. So thanks everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thanks. Have a great.